your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Health Forum with Ruth Sackman. All comments, views, and opinions are solely those of the hosts, guests, and callers. In the next hour, Ruth and her guests guide you through the maze of health information and misinformation out there. So pull up a chair. Here's your host, Ruth Sackman.
Hello. We're here with Dr. Peter Duisberg, a microbiologist at the University of California in Berkeley. But before I introduce the guest to you any further, I want to talk about the way research funds are distributed. I don't think many people understand what goes on. Now, this is it. Most of the funding for research is put out by the pharmaceutical industry. They spend a huge amount on research, but there's a drawback to that research. They don't fund any research unless there's a saleable product at the end of the work, which of course is very limiting. People are doing research with nutrition, with herbal substances, with other elements. One doctor is doing research with immunotherapy. None of these things necessarily provide a saleable product, especially hyperthermia. Rarely can the pharmaceutical industry participate in that. The federal government does some research too, but they seem to be pointing their research in somewhat, a little bit not, but mostly in a similar direction that the pharmaceutical industry is taking. And if they do find something, they pass it on to the pharmaceutical industry because they would ultimately make the product and they follow through. So that's the picture of research that we're working with and what Dr. Duisberg is working with. I hope you don't mind if I start out the program with some introduction to the work you did any number of years ago. It might be at least 10 years ago when I first met you, and you had taken a position different from the established position on what was causing HIV and AIDS, and even to this day, that's a very hot, important topic. Because people are still dying of AIDS, and it's been diagnosed, so-called diagnosed in Africa. You notice I use the term so-called.
Very well. Yes, I do notice that. Yes.
All right. Because I'm not sure that the yardstick they're using, the conventional system for determining whether a person has HIV or AIDS, is necessarily viral related.
That is the hypothesis that was advanced in 1984 by Robert Gallo and the NIH. In part, in fact, it was a politically motivated move because at that time Ronald Reagan was seeking re-election, and it wasn't very clear cut that he was going to win it. So it was pointed out to him that he had to say something about the now upcoming, at that time, upcoming AIDS epidemic. Did he have anything to say about it? And he didn't say a word about it until then. And the discovery of a viral cause of it was everybody's favorite solution, a politically correct solution. You wouldn't have to deal with the ethical or moral issues about homosexuality. You wouldn't have to, what they call in the business, blaming the victim, that the victim would be responsible. We would have a God-given virus that, as the slogan was and still is in a way, we are all in this together, we all have the same risk, Liz Taylor just as much as Rock Hudson. And that patently proved to be wrong. The risk was not a for all of us equal. It was very different. There were two major risk groups, and they're still the same today. Most of them are male homosexuals, but not your all-American male homosexual, but some very particularly active subgroups. They call them the circuit. They participate in these circuit parties, the cruising, or whatever the slogans are for this. That is, those who have hundreds and sometimes even thousands of sexual contacts. And in order to achieve this number of contacts, they are using recreational drugs as, again, a euphemistic word for amphetamines, nitrite inhalants, poppers, as they're also called, cocaine and other recreational drugs, which in the long run are very bad for your health. And worse than that, many of them who are diagnosed HIV positive or in those risk groups also take then antiretroviral or anti-HIV virus drugs, which are, in fact, inevitably toxic because they are designed to inhibit synthesis of DNA, which is the central molecule of life. They were developed for chemotherapy 40 or 50 years ago and are now used as antiviral drugs with the huge so-called side effect of killing your normal cells, and that is very toxic on itself. So anyway, this is the basic alternative explanation for AIDS, and everybody favored a virus because with a virus you don't have to argue with people who do chemotherapy, you don't have to argue with toxicity, you don't have to blame anybody. Nobody is we don't have to investigate anybody's so-called lifestyle. And so that became the everybody's favorite theory. Also, the newspapers like to write about it, how the virus could be spread. But the reality is, to this day, it has not become a heterosexual or epidemic. The general population did not get AIDS, even though we have 4 to 5 million babies per year in this country, which are all generated by conventional unprotected sex, which should have spread this epidemic if it had been a viral or contagious epidemic as it was predicted.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I criticized 10, 15 years ago and continue to criticize today. And in fact, there are more and more people doing this. There's an article, or two articles appeared this year in Harper's Magazine, one in March and one in May, that made very much those same points too.
All right. Peter, first of all, let me say this. During all these years when we've been coming across people with AIDS or HIV, and they have not submitted to the typical treatment that's been recommended, and many of them are doing fine, the idea should be now to examine that situation where people have been diagnosed and they're doing fine years and years later, 10 and so years later.
In fact, but, you know, what you're suggesting right now is the best experiment that I have ever come up with in proposing. That is to test this theory. We should take what's called a matched group of, let's say, south HIV positive and negatives, and see, do the positives get the AIDS-defining diseases as the theory predicts? And in fact, 5 to 10 years later, they should be dead because the virus would have killed them, and the controls would not. And there are perfect groups for this available in this country and abroad. The United States Army does 3 million tests a year of the soldiers or the recruits who might be drafted. And roughly 1 in 1,000 is positive. So they have every year 3,000 positives who would be ideal controls. They live the same lifestyle. They're young guys. They don't have any other major diseases. It's unlikely that you have a junkie enlisting for the U.S. Army. They have the same nutrition. They are usually healthy guys. When they're available, the government does these tests, because the government endorsed the NIH did the HIV theory for over 15 years now.
Yes.
All they would have to do is look up their records and say, are these guys dead without shooting ever the enemy or ever being on the front? They should be dying or having these diseases. We hear not a word about it. This would be the cleanest test. And there are anecdotal tests like that dozens and dozens. They call them the long-term survivors, or
yes.
Now they have a new word for them, the elite controllers, but they never really want to put it out in a major paper because
yeah.
People like you and like me would realize, hey, when so many people who are not doing drugs get nothing from HIV, maybe the drugs are doing it after all, the problem.
Mm-hmm. All right. You know why I wanted to bring this up, although
yes.
We had a very important topic scheduled, but I wanted to bring this up at this particular time because mm-hmm. Just last week there was an announcement coming from CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control, which said that there are a lot of people out there who had AIDS or HIV who were not being tested. And they were proposing that everybody be tested, but not have the will to say no. Actually, they wanted it compulsory.
That is exactly right. It's what I noticed. And then
you see, what a dangerous situation. Their position is that all of these people all of us should be tested for fear someone is carrying the virus, doesn't know it, and will be transferring it to someone else. In the meantime, if they're tested and tested positive by the standards set up today, and given the medication that's available, which is usually AZT, they're putting these people into, well, put it this way, they're putting them on harmful medication. Now, which is worse?
Well, it is very clear which is worse. HIV is probably totally harmless. It's a passenger virus.
But the AZT
is AIDS by prescription. That is what it is. It knocks out your T cells. Your weight goes down. It's like chemotherapy for the rest of your life. How long
That's
are
right.
you going to
the
live
body
from chemotherapy?
The body can't tolerate regular doses of something that's in that category, a toxic material. Peter, the music that's coming on now shows us this is the end of the first quarter, all right? And we'll just tell our listeners that we'll be back.
Okay, it's a break now. Okay, very good. Thanks.
Okay.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
The Foundation for Advancement in Cancer Therapy, FACT, a nonprofit educational organization established in 1971, is an information and referral service for people seeking non-toxic approaches to health and healing. It supports and encourages biological cancer research, nutritional science investigations, disseminates information about non-toxic treatment for cancer to cancer patients, and fights to eliminate carcinogenic substances from the environment. From book lists, case history sections, and information on stem cells to cancer forum, FACT's quarterly magazine. FACT is designed to serve the patient as a clearinghouse to cut through the overwhelming mass of information and misinformation on alternative cancer therapies in order to help individuals make the wisest medical choices possible. For more information on the Foundation for Advancement in Cancer Therapy, visit FACT-LTD.org or call 212-741-2790. Cancer information and support is just a click away. FACT-LTD.org.
Suppose you've just received a diagnosis of cancer. You're overwhelmed with a vast amount of information about conventional as well as alternative treatments. Which way do you go? Read Ruth Sackman's book, Rethinking Cancer. It might help you to make just this kind of crucial decision. Written in clear, common sense language, Rethinking Cancer shifts the focus from tumor reduction to correcting the cause of abnormal cell production. Rethinking Cancer is not only must-reading for those with a cancer diagnosis, but for anyone interested in improving and maintaining health. Rethinking Cancer is available for $16.95 at most bookstores, or call Square One Publishers, 877-900-2665. That's 877-900-2665.
Tune in to Health Crusades with John Farley every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Health Crusades seeks to enhance one's lifestyle, physical, mental, emotional, financial, and intellectual empowerment. Your host, John Farley, the author of Living Lean and the creator of the revolutionary Sleep Slim Weight Management System, brings expert guests to inform and entertain you each week. A live healing circle is also provided for those facing life-challenging health issues. That's Health Crusades with John Farley, every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Voice America Health and Wellness.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
I think we're back on the air again, Peter. And I think if people listen to what you're saying, if they understand how important it is to be careful before they allow themselves to be diagnosed, if they don't know they have HIV or AIDS, they probably go on and live to their life expectancy. And if they're diagnosed and something turns up that the diagnostician thinks is suspicious, they're going into a syndrome of treatment that is dangerous.
Inevitably dangerous. I mean, it's not just dangerous, it's inevitably toxic. It's predictably toxic.
There's no question about nearly all the pharmaceuticals are toxic. What the pharmaceutical industry says, they don't mind telling people that it's poison. I don't know what term to use, toxic or poison, but let's know that either word means the same thing. But if the substance is toxic, the pharmaceutical company says, but if you use it as directed, that's their protective mantle. If anyone isn't gets into trouble and sues them, they say, we've spelled it out. You haven't probably used it as directed. And that covers them.
Yeah, their best coverage is, of course, the virus AIDS hypothesis, which holds that nothing could be worse than this virus human immunodeficiency virus. So even a chemotherapy, which is designed to kill human cells, and it's a legitimate medication against cancer. If you have a cancer that's about to kill you, that's what you try. And more often than not, it doesn't work there either, but at least you have a chance. But here you give this prescription not just for a couple of weeks or months, like in cancer chemotherapy, but for the rest of your life. It's inevitable that these people are dying, and they're going to die from the same diseases that chemotherapy causes: weight loss, hair loss, immune deficiency, and that's AIDS. So they get AIDS by prescription from the medication that is designed or set to hold off the virus that would cause the same thing. So if it finally happens, they say, well, the virus has mutated and we have done our best to prolong your life.
Mm-hmm.
That is the horrible aspect of this, the real dilemma in this. I mean, I don't think it's all bad intention, but it is following a theory that is endorsed by the government, or hypothesis, this virus hypothesis, and has never been proved in 21 years of research and over 100 billions of dollars in research money. Nobody has been able to prove this theory. It's still a hypothesis without proof.
I know that years ago, when you made your position public, there was a flurry of interest in what you were saying, but at the same time, they're typical. There's always someone on the side of the pharmaceutical industry, on the side of the government position. I can't help but wonder if they're thinking straight when these people have the right credentials and they come out in support of what the pharmaceutical industry and the government is saying. And there was this was an argument debated publicly, and I don't know, nationally, actually, when you made your statement.
It was then.
Wasn't there a book written by a couple of books written about the position?
Yeah, there are several books written. One of them is called Inventing the AIDS Virus. I mean, I have something to do with that. But there are several others written in the meantime. Quite a few good books are available now. I can send you a list of them. One of them, as I said, Inventing the AIDS Virus.
Slower, Peter.
Inventing the AIDS Virus. And it's published by Regnery. Regnery in Washington, D.C., R-E-G-N-E-R-Y, Inventing the AIDS Virus, you know, Regnery, 1996. And there are quite a few others in the meantime that question the virus-AIDS connection. Yeah.
I would suggest that lay people and professionals who are listening to this program, before they submit to treatment, that they bone up on all of the printed material that's there, taking another position. They know what the present position is of the government. They need to look to see if there's an alternative way. And from our experience here, we get calls from people all over the world. This program, by the way, is on internet radio, which means it's going all over the world as well. We have people in Israel and Europe who call in that they've listened to the program. So if people are hearing this program, they need to pass the word on for everyone to investigate the other point of view very carefully before they make a decision to go on AZT. Don't you think that's sensible?
Oh, that is very, very sensible. I think that's life-saving what you're saying here. I mean, I wouldn't say that about many things, but this is about as clear-cut as water is. It's immensely sensible that they would not follow just the orthodoxy or the general assumption. And by the way, even the AIDS organizations or the AIDS establishment, as it is called now, this HIV AIDS establishment, admits and even advertises they have never cured one patient. Never. All they say is they have prolonged life. It doesn't cure AIDS. They say it's not possible because the virus remains there and mutates and gets, over time, becomes resistant to the treatment, which is a euphemism of saying that the treatment now is actually about to cause AIDS in you, in yourself, because of the treatment. The other side that you mentioned earlier are the millions of people who are untreated and don't even know. As the Centers for Disease Control just says, oh, we have to test them. They don't even know. Well, isn't that a great disease to have? You don't even know about it for 20 years? We know from since 1985 from the CDC that 1 million Americans are HIV positive. But they don't know it. We better tell them now. 20 years later, they should be dead.
Of course.
But they're not. They're living just as long and as well as we do.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization lists 40 million HIV-positive people in the world. When you look at their statistics of mortality and AIDS, it is 1.4% of the 40 million people. 2 or 3 years ago, when I last checked it carefully, 1 million about had died. That's like 5%. Well, that's less than you would expect in normal mortality of 40 million people in 20 years of age.
Yes, yes.
You see, the normal mortality of all of us, since hardly anybody gets over 100, is a little over 1%. It's if you're 100, it would be 1%. If you all of us get 100, but all over the world, it's more like 50 or 60. So we would the normal mortality is the AIDS incidence among these 40 million, according to the World Health Organization, is lower than the more normal mortality.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look in America, where they have the last statistics, the vast statistics of treated people, the mortality, even with the best treatments that they can offer, is 7 or 8% or 9%. That is, of those treated with antiviral drugs, 7 to 9% die every year. Mm. That's a mortality of 8 or 9%. That's very high. Much higher than those who are left untreated and undiagnosed, if they're lucky.
That's, you know, what surprises me, your funding for your research had come from the government. Am I correct?
Yes, for 25 years.
Your credentials were good enough for them to fund your research.
I was a microbiologist. I was the blue-eyed boy in the field. I had found these retroviral oncogenes. I had mapped the genetic structure of so-called retroviruses. I mean, there are retroviruses, they exist. The same viruses or family of viruses to which HIV belongs. I was in an excellent position to analyze the theory or the hypothesis that HIV is causing AIDS, and I had a great stake in it. If it were true, it would have been very much to my advantage. By reflected chloride alone, having worked on the genetic structure of retroviruses and found oncogenes in them and gotten the National Academy for it and everything I wanted for years, I couldn't do anything wrong. The reflected chloride alone would have made me famous. So that's why I looked at it and I said, look, this doesn't add up. There isn't a virus anywhere in the history of virology or microbiology that causes a fatal disease 10 years after infection and only then, and 10 years after it is neutralized by antibodies. That's the principle of natural vaccination and artificial vaccination. Mm-hmm. When it's neutralized by antibodies, every doctor in the world, in this country and everywhere else, will tell you, for all other viruses except HIV, you're fine. Don't worry about it. You don't have to treat anything. You have the best protection nature and science can offer, a vaccine, except when it comes to HIV. Oh, they say, oh, you have antibodies to HIV. You have been infected a couple of years ago. Watch out, 5-10 years from now, you get this horrible disease. There's no precedent for this. There's no explanation. There's no logic. 20 years of work have not closed that gap even a tiny bit. It makes simply no sense. A virus causes a symptom or a disease or any other microbe when it's active and before the immune system can work on it. Not when it's inactive 10 years later and long neutralized.
You know, you have all the right credentials, all the background. When you've took this position about AIDS and HIV, the government, if it was functioning correctly, should have paid a great deal of attention to it instead of suddenly finding itself critical.
Yeah.
There has to be some motive for that kind of thing because it's not logical. All right, Peter, we're at the end of this segment, and to you listeners, I hope you're getting a lot of exceptional information here, and we'll be back. Just stay with us.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
The Foundation for Advancement in Cancer Therapy, FACT, a nonprofit educational organization established in 1971, is an information and referral service for people seeking non-toxic approaches to health and healing. It supports and encourages biological cancer research, nutritional science investigations, disseminates information about non-toxic treatment for cancer to cancer patients, and fights to eliminate carcinogenic substances from the environment. From book lists, case history sections, and information on stem cells to cancer form, FACT's quarterly magazine. FACT is designed to serve the patient as a clearinghouse to cut through the overwhelming mass of information and misinformation on alternative cancer therapies in order to help individuals make the wisest medical choices possible. For more information on the Foundation for Advancement in Cancer Therapy, visit FACT-LTD.org or call 212-741-2790. Cancer information and support is just a click away. FACT-LTD.org.
Suppose you've just received a diagnosis of cancer. You're overwhelmed with a vast amount of information about conventional as well as alternative treatments. Which way do you go? Read Ruth Sackman's book, Rethinking Cancer. It might help you to make just this kind of crucial decision. Written in clear, common sense language, Rethinking Cancer shifts the focus from tumor reduction to correcting the cause of abnormal cell production. Rethinking Cancer is not only must reading for those with a cancer diagnosis, but for anyone interested in improving and maintaining health. Rethinking Cancer is available for $16.95 at most bookstores, or call Square One Publishers, 877-900-2665. That's 877-900-2665.
Tune in on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart, the program that takes you on a journey through grief after the death of a child. Join Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist and bereaved parent, while she interviews and discusses with other bereaved parents and siblings how they have coped with the death of a child and gone on to create and realize new dreams. So tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart with Dr. Gloria Horsley, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
All right, we're back on the air. And I really am grateful to you that you were willing to discuss this topic, although this wasn't scheduled for this day. But because of what had occurred last week where they, CDC, felt this ought to be compulsory testing, I think this is a dangerous process, and maybe the people ought to be better informed, and those listeners we have, as I say, they can inform others. But I think we have an obligation to go back to the research that you're doing now, and that we had actually scheduled originally as the topic for today. Don't you think we ought to get back into that?
Very well. That is an even bigger topic than AIDS. It is cancer that we are talking about now, and a theory that has been around for a long time, but has again is called the chromosomal theory of cancer, namely that an abnormal number of chromosomes is the cause of cancer. The currently prevailing theory is that mutations of specific genes are the cause of cancer. These two theories are now both discussed in research, although the established mutation theory is by far the one, the most favored theory and the best funded theory. The chromosomal theory, however, is coming back and might be much better suited to explain numerous questions about cancer. One that you probably all know is cancer is initially caused by so-called carcinogens. And carcinogens could be a substance like radiation, or it could be cigarette smoke, or it could be hormones, or it could be dioxin. You heard about that toxic chemical dioxin. It could be mineral oils. It could be tar. Any of these substances have been shown, or asbestos, to be strong causes of cancer. But when you analyze these substances, are they in fact mutagens, substances that cause mutations? Only about half of them are ever mutagens. Asbestos is one of the most inert substances we know. That's why we shield rockets coming back into the atmosphere with asbestos, or line breaks with asbestos, or used to line, because it's so inert. It doesn't oxidize, and it doesn't corrode, and doesn't react with anything because it's so inert. The same thing is true about tar and oils. They're chemically very unreactive. That's why we pave our roads with it. But they're very carcinogenic. So here's a big contradiction that the mutation theory cannot explain. But wait what you see if you put these substances on a mouse, on a cat, on an animal, or in cells in culture to test whether they are carcinogenic. They are very carcinogenic, and what do you see? Long before you see a cancer, you see that the chromosomes of the cells treated with these substances become abnormal. The numbers change and the structures change. And that is called aneuploidy in in the business of chromosome structure. But anyway, the chromosome structure is changed. It's no longer normal. And when that happens, everything is open. Everything changes. One example that most of you will know, outside cancer now, that's why I picked it, is Down syndrome. It's one tiny, the smallest of our chromosomes, one extra copy at birth is in your developing cell, in every cell in your body, because it was there in your fertilized egg from which we all came. And your whole life is different. Just because one tiny extra chromosome is in there, you look different, your life expectancy is about 30 years, you have heart diseases and kidney diseases and high mortality, high cancer risk, all of these things, just for one extra chromosome. But if you look at the chromosomes of a typical lung cancer or prostate cancer or colon cancer or breast cancer, your typical cancer has, instead of the normal 46 chromosomes that we all have in our cells right now, nearly all of us, in all cells, namely 46, these cancers have 70 to 80 chromosomes in them. 70 to 80. And they are not the same structure, many of them. They're differently structured, and numbers are different. This is completely, that is not even our species. See, the species man is defined by these 46 chromosomes. The next closest one is the gorillas or the apes, and they have 48 or 46 chromosomes. And then comes the dogs and cats, and so they have 20 or 40 chromosomes, and hamsters. But the species all have their own sets of chromosomes. If that changes, everything changes. When nature wants to make a real big change in animals or in humans or in plants, you change the chromosomes. You make a new species. God knows how that works. In fact, I'm not kidding here. God is the only one how it actually could be done. We scientists have never come even close to doing this. We can only say it so, but how it ever happened, only really God knows. But if you want to make, you want to convert us to a cat, you could do it if you simply recoup these chromosomes. Very much like you, a motor company changes from a sports car to an SUV by recouping these assembly lines, the retooling. So the chromosomes make huge changes, not small ones. The mutations make tiny changes, chromosomes big ones. And if you look at the cancer, these are, on a cellular level, huge changes. The cancer cell has its own metabolism. It is immortal. It can metastasize. It resists chemotherapy. It has properties that are never, ever seen in normal cells. Mutations cannot generate any of these phenotypes, as we call it, in a normal cell. But if you shift around the chromosomes, then you get these big changes. And it is for this reason that we are studying that theory now, that chromosome changes are the causes of cancer rather than the mutation theory. But once more, because it's not the current mainstream, the majority of scientists studies the mutation, it's very difficult to get funding, and that's why I turned to Ruth Sackmann, the Foundation for the Advancement for Cancer Therapy, to get some help. And sure enough, I did get some help, and now I'm even on a program to talk to her about it, and to you, the listeners, about it. If you have any questions or so, or in the future, maybe we can talk more about it. Okay, maybe I've said too much already. Is that what you... Are there more questions about this I could answer? Hello?
Yes.
Okay, so you see... Okay, one other one that perhaps is familiar to most of the listeners and is very incompatible with the so-called mutation theory. A mutation that you introduce into an animal or into an egg or into a plant, it either kills a cell or shows a new phenotype within one cell generation. That is very fast. If you mutate a gene in an animal or certainly in a cell in culture or in a bacterium, today it will be penicillin resistant tomorrow. Or it will be, you can mutate it from black to white and it will be white tomorrow from blonde to brunette, and she will or he will be blonde or brunette tomorrow and will stay so for a long time because mutations are very stable. But when you treat humans or animals or cells with so-called with carcinogens, substances that cause cancer, it takes years to decades. That's actually some, if you want, even some good news about cancer. There are not so many good news about cancer, but one is even the highest survivable dose of carcinogens, whether it's cigarettes or atom bombs, do not cause ever cancer right away. It takes years for them to cause cancer. The classical model is the atom bombs in Japan. The people who survived the bomb developed cancers, epithelial cancers, that is colon, breast, or lung cancers, only 10, 20, and sometimes only 30 years later.
In Nagasaki, where the bomb was dropped, it was 30 years later when leukemia began to show up.
You're totally right, see. And this cannot be explained by mutations. Mutations would have done it within weeks or months after the bomb, not decades later.
Yeah.
But the chromosomal theory offers an explanation. And it's not totally, totally simple to explain right away for somebody who's not familiar with it, but I can try. What it does, as I said, instead of just mutating, it does that too. It breaks or eliminates some chromosomes. That's what your radiation does. Now, the cell already is aneuploid. In other words, the cells that has been irradiated, but not is that is not dying from it right away, has now an abnormal chromosome number, too many or too few, or broken and rearranged chromosomes. It's no longer a normal cell, chromosomally. Many thousands of genes on every chromosome have been increased or decreased in that cell. Now, what's the result of this? This unbalances, as we would say, or corrupts, hundreds and thousands of teams of proteins that have played together in a very fixed order for billions of years of life. As long as life, as old life is, these teams are the same or have been kept the same or changed tiny, tiny bit, not much. And now you change suddenly hundreds of teams playing together in a cell like football team or baseball team or soccer team, what have you. And now you get unpredictable results. You destabilize many assembly lines because the teams don't work right together anymore. They make mistakes. And every time a cell divides that is already aneuploid is at a high risk of either dying, making a major mistake, and then it's dead, and that's good for us. The same actually with mutation. But there's a small risk that every time it divides, it makes a new mistake, and it makes things worse. So it gets more, it becomes more and more aneuploid over time. And occasionally, like in the lottery, it finds a combination of chromosomes that generates a cell that now grows even better than your normal cells do from which it came.
Peter.
Then we have cancer.
With this research adopted, wouldn't it mean that the medical community has to take a different position of what cancer is and how it's created?
The position would be quite different, yeah. The consequences wouldn't be infinitely, but there would be a lot of differences for diagnosis and also treatment.
All right, which would mean the treatment would change. We're at the end of this segment again, and I'm going to give the people a telephone number if they want to take it down. Be prepared, and you can call in if you like. And we're entering our fourth segment, and that will be the last. But we'll be back. Stay with us.
Your life, your health, your network. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
the Foundation for Advancement in Cancer Therapy, FACT, a nonprofit educational organization established in 1971, is an information and referral service for people seeking non-toxic approaches to health and healing. It supports and encourages biological cancer research, nutritional science investigations, disseminates information about non-toxic treatment for cancer to cancer patients, and fights to eliminate carcinogenic substances from the environment. From book lists, case history sections, and information on stem cells to Cancer Forum, FACT's quarterly magazine. FACT is designed to serve the patient as a clearinghouse to cut through the overwhelming mass of information and misinformation on alternative cancer therapies in order to help individuals make the wisest medical choices possible. For more information on the Foundation for Advancement in Cancer Therapy, visit FACT-LTD.org or call 212-741-2790. Cancer information and support is just a click away. FACT-LTD.org.
Suppose you've just received a diagnosis of cancer. You're overwhelmed with a vast amount of information about conventional as well as alternative treatments. Which way do you go? Read Ruth Sackman's book, Rethinking Cancer. It might help you to make just this kind of crucial decision. Written in clear, common sense language, Rethinking Cancer shifts the focus from tumor reduction to correcting the cause of abnormal cell production. Rethinking Cancer is not only must reading for those with a cancer diagnosis, but for anyone interested in improving and maintaining health. Rethinking Cancer is available for $16.95 at most bookstores, or call Square One Publishers, 877-900-2665. That's 877-900-2665.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time for Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look, this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
All right, Peter, we're back on the air.
Okay.
And I hope the listener is finding it as fascinating as I am finding it and realizing the importance of this kind of research. And it needs to be investigated carefully because the concept of cancer that they have today and the treatment that is used for that concept does not produce cure, by the way. Most people are assuming it is a curable system, but it's really a buying time system, and they do buy time with what they're doing. But there's nothing in that system that zeroes in on what's causing the cancer production and to focus on the system to curb abnormal cell production.
Yeah.
All they do is focus on the tumor itself, which we consider the symptom of a breakdown in body chemistry, and that if you just reduce tumor size, but if you don't zero in on the cause, it recurs over and over again, and that's what's called a metastasis. And so the logic is here with this kind of thinking, and we already have loads of patients that have recovered using, I don't like to use the term alternative, using a biorepair system.
I like that too. It's better than the alternative always makes you look like second choice.
Yeah.
And that's not what it is.
But it's a biorepair system. All right, I don't want to take away from this vast knowledge you have about the chromosomes. Let me do this, though, before we go into that. If anyone wants to call in, I'm going to give you a toll-free number, as I promised. It's 866-472-5792, and I'll repeat that. 866-472-5792. 5792. And let me say this to add on to it. If you do call in and you're holding on the telephone, the program itself can be heard over the telephone. You may want to know that. And if you don't call in, let me give you the phone number of our office, because we've had people call in there to follow up. It's 212-741-2790. Now repeat that. It's 212-741-2790. And we'll try to provide answers for you either way. All right. So, Dr. Duesberg, you can follow through with what you were saying.
All right, very well. So what I was trying to explain, another discrepancy between cancer or carcinogenesis, the time or the generation of cancer from a carcinogen to a clinical disease, that is that cannot be explained by the prevailing mutation theory. So a mutation, when you mutate a gene by radiation or by chemical or by other methods spontaneously, then the phenotype changes of the, in the cell in the next generation. Now the gene is mutated, and it makes a different protein, and a protein makes a phenotype. So
when you say mutation, are you thinking mutating from a healthy cell into a cancer cell?
That is the prevailing theory.
Yes, that's a prevailing theory.
So, and I explain now, say, the principle briefly of mutation. Mutation means you change a gene, and that doesn't have to be cancer.
Yeah, our position is this, that it's not changing the normal cell. It's causing the production of abnormal cells.
Yeah, well, that is roughly what we are talking about here. Yeah,
okay.
That's definitely what we're talking about here. Yeah. So the mutation theory says the genes are changing. The chromosomes are not even mentioned, implying that the chromosomes, like in all genetics, stay the same. That is, if you all the sexual or the other the bacterial genetics are based on leaving the chromosomes normal and changing genes. So you become blonde or brunette or smart or stupid or have long or short legs, mm-hmm. or black or white skin color by mutations of specific genes within the species. But if you change the chromosomes, very fast you get huge differences, and with one single exception, you are immediately outside the species. And one is the X and Y chromosomes. If you have an X chromosome, or two of them, you are a girl, and if you have a Y chromosome, you are a boy. And you see the phenotype in most cases that I know of very fast and very, very easy for this one little chromosome, much more than a mutation. You see this is a boy and this is a girl. And that's necessary, of course, in this case for the survival of the species via sexual reproduction. But all other chromosomal changes get us out of the species. If we change the number of chromosomes, many of them remaining even the same, eliminating two of them or fusing two of them together, we have all of a sudden now 48 chromosomes instead of the 46 that we have. We're breaking one up, I'm sorry to say. And then we are a chimpanzee and a gorilla, and you see huge difference. But when you change genes, you always remain a mensch or a human being. That is, and no matter how much you mutate, it may be not a better mensch, but it will be a mensch, and you will see from a distance that thing walks on two legs, if it still has those legs. But in principle, it does, and how it functions and how it looks, you can see. The basic structure remains unchanged. If you want to change the basic structure and big changes in the function, you've got to change the chromosomes. And as I try to explain, that is what carcinogens are doing. They break up chromosomes at random and rearrange them and knock them out. And now you have random aneuploidies in these cells, random. And most of them don't generate a phenotype that is too exciting. They function poorly or they die from it. But because thousands of genes are now out of balance, they're no longer working in the same teams. The teams have changed. They keep making mistakes. Making mistakes, particularly at the most complicated job that the cell is ever doing, namely doubling these 46 chromosomes, which are huge in size. The biggest molecules in the cell are the chromosomal DNAs. They are the central molecules of life. When the cell divides, they have to be doubled, and then imagine the problem. Now they have a deck of 40, instead of 46 chromosomes, now they have 92 chromosomes in that cell, and now they have to be sorted out and divided into two new cells. That's called this mitosis or the cell division. Mm-hmm. That happens every second in us, hundreds, thousands of times. And almost never does the cell make a mistake in it. It's an unbelievable, literally a miracle. We see the miracle happening, but how that works is mind-boggling. But it does work exceedingly well. But not if you change the balance of the physical tools, like the spindle apparatus, which is an apparatus that ties up all these 46 chromosomes and divides them into two poles, sorts them out and divides them evenly. When you change the balance, when you don't tie it up correctly, or the strings are shorter on one end than on the other, and that is happening when you change the balance of these parts. It's like a suspension bridge. You know, it is very stable when it's well balanced. It can swing and stand. But if you change the length of the rope of one of them and not of the other by taking a chromosome away or adding one, just to give you an analogy, then the thing limps and hangs and it can break down and fall down. And that is what's happening in aneuploid cells. They keep changing their chromosomes and occasionally a combination comes up that can now be a successful parasite living on the normal cells, and that is a cancer. And this cancer is now also unstable and changes in itself, and that's called tumor progression. It gets worse and worse. It becomes drug resistant, it becomes invasive, it becomes immortal, and all of these odd things that are only seen in cancer cells and never in normal cells. And that's the theory we want to study now. And there's one good promise that this theory holds over the existing theory. As I told you, the initial insult, the initial aneuploidy, happens long before the cancer follows. So here's the atomic bomb converting lots of cells to aneuploid cells. And you can see this aneuploidy long before you get cancer. And if we look for it, we could probably prevent a lot of cancer and treat a lot of cancer
Peter, that's the end of the program.
Very well. Okay.
All right. Do you realize the research community, the medical community, all the people working with cancer need to take a look at other things that come along, because the system in place today is a failure. It is not curing, and they're looking for help. And yet, I think some of the best research is being ignored. Now, that's the end of our program, Peter, and a little too soon, I can say. We may try to follow up again at some later date. I have things scheduled for another 3 weeks, and we'll see, all right? Do you mind? And I'm so grateful you were able to accept this invitation. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much, Ruth. I mean, I'm looking forward to coming back on sometime.
Well, thank you, and thank you again.
And thank you. Okay, and I sent off, while we were talking, I already sent off this thing about the peer review in Cannes. You'll have a look at it, and we can talk about it later by email.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, have a nice day then.
You too. We're going to have to say goodbye. I guess that's our closing music. We'll be back again next Wednesday at the same time. I think that's October 4th.
Good enough. And please send me the Yahoo or whatever the codes to get the password.
Yeah, we're going to get a place where people can pose questions, and then we can ask them, pose them again at the next program.
Thank you.
Okay. But it's been a pleasure. I'm so glad that we had this talk.
Thank you for listening to Health Forum. To contact Ruth about the show, Visit fact-ltd.org or call 212-741-2790. That's 212-741-2790. Tune in next Wednesday for another hour of Health Forum with Ruth Sackman.